Welcome to episode 369 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm your host and producer, Josh Pollard.
And I'm your host, Richard Gunther, and this is the show where we talk about Microsoft Entertainment technology, including audio, video, gaming, and more across all Windows platforms.
Richard, it feels like forever since we've done this.
And it's only been 2 weeks. I know, anytime we take a week off, it seems like forever. It's because we miss each other.
It is. Yeah, because, you know, normally you and I have other times that we talk and stuff, and we haven't talked, like, at all in the last couple of weeks.
Oh, and that's actually a really good point, because we had a holiday, and we had some travel, and yeah, so, yeah.
So, welcome to summer, and, you know, the other thing, like, there were two reasons we didn't do the show last week. One was life was insane, and the other one was, on Tuesday, there was nothing to talk about. And then Wednesday, well, basically late Tuesday night, yeah. And then Wednesday, everything went crazy.
Yep.
So I'm kind of glad we didn't do a show on Tuesday anyway. It worked out pretty well. So a lot to talk about tonight, including a little bit of feedback. We've got a comment to get into. But first, a message that Bob sent in via email. This was in response to our last episode where we were talking about how the NVIDIA Shield running the HD Home Run DVR allows you to set up a series recording based on your favorite sports teams, where you just say, I love the Pittsburgh Penguins, record every Pittsburgh Penguins game. And how great that was. He says, you mentioned it's possible to do the above on NVIDIA Shield, but not on Windows Media Center. Isn't setting a series recording basically the same thing? I'm not sure. Because I'm not a sports ball fanatic, normally shortened to fan, I am, however, still a fanatic about your show. Well, Bob, we appreciate that very much. So, yes, you can absolutely do series recordings with Windows Media Center, and they work fine. The problem is that with sports, a lot of times the licensing between the various networks, those agreements are always nuts. Like, you know, if you live near, you know, I'll use Pittsburgh as an example. Even though I don't live near Pittsburgh, I know that if I did, then most of the games would be on Root Sports. Most, but not all, because sometimes the games are covered nationally, in which case they would be on NBC Sports, maybe. So if I just set up a series recording based on the Root Sports one, then I'm going to miss some of the recordings. Now, are there ways around this? Yes. But the point that I was trying to make is that this sounds a lot easier. If I can just say, record every Penguins game with one action, then that's a lot easier than me having to go in and say, well, record every Penguins game that's on around this time on Root, and record every Penguins game that's on around this time on NBC Sports. And oh, in the springtime, on the weekends, NBC carries the game sometimes. Like, it can get bonkers if you want to try and do this with sports. So this does actually make it a whole lot easier.
I think one way that you might be able to make it a little easier, not as easy as one click for sure, but I think with the ability to schedule a series recording based on search terms, which you can then categorize. So you could say, I want it to be sports, and then I want it to be, you know, Penguins hockey. And in theory, it should pick up anything. But my experience with stuff like that is that you get false positives.
Mm, yep. The other problem is, and I hate the fact that we harp on this so often, but the guide data situation just isn't great anymore. You know, now that we're in the into the playoffs, you know, the schedule is changing. You know,
right.
If a playoff series ends and your team goes on to the next round, you might not get a guide data update before the next game happens. So you could miss a game that way. So there's a lot of things making this difficult. Hopefully, HD Home Run DVR has all of this figured out.
That would be nice. Our next message is from Rasputin. What an awesome name. This is not so much a message as it is a comment from a post that I wrote 4 years ago.
The 2012.
comment was just a couple days old, however. And this was a post that I wrote about how Paramount's rollout of Ultraviolet was a complete disaster. And I don't know if anyone remembers this, but one of the things that Paramount did in their rollout is that they made Ultraviolet copies available through digital downloads in Windows Media format. They were one of the very few studios that did that. Rasputin notes, wow, here it is, 4 years later, and it hasn't gotten any better. In fact, it's worse. I bought the Blu-ray DVD digital copy of the new True Grit, and when I tried to download the Windows Media copy using the DVD, it said they don't support Windows Media anymore, and I should go to their website and enter my code there. So when I did, they said to insert the DVD and follow the instructions, which is how I got to the website to begin with. I'm waiting to hear back from their support team, if they still have one.
Ouch.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's funny. I think for all intents and purposes, we just have to give up on the idea of Ultraviolet providing us with physical, that's not even the right term, but digital copies that we can download to our machines. I think ultimately what Ultraviolet means is streaming and streaming only. And if you look at it that way, it's not as bad as it used to be. It's a whole lot easier, largely thanks to companies like Flixster, now owned by Fandango, and, well, Vudu, which is owned by Walmart. And
right.
Those two services have really made the Ultraviolet ecosystem kind of tolerable.
As long as you live in the United States.
Oh, well, there's that too, right? And that's pretty much our video story.
That's okay. There's plenty of other stuff here going on, and a lot of other video-related things that we'll be discussing later. But let's get into some audio news. First up, Spotify back in the news. They've made some changes to their family plan. The new plan now allows you to have up to 6 family members for the cost of $14.99 a month. Now that means 6 individual premium accounts, meaning 6 accounts that don't have to listen to commercials, 6 accounts that all have their own playlist, their own recommendations, all of that stuff. You have one bill and that's it. Like, this sounds fantastic, especially if you have, you know, like older kids or something like that. Like if you've got teenagers and stuff that are all listening to music all the time, like this is a no-brainer.
Well, and there's the rub, right? Because if you want to make this available to younger kids, as far as we know, there's still no way of putting parental controls on your younger kids' accounts.
Yeah, exactly. And this has been a big struggle for my house. You know, my older daughter, she's 8 now, and she's starting to get more into music, loves Taylor Swift and some other things. And, you know, she only listens to things that we find appropriate. She doesn't even know about things that we don't find appropriate for her. But, you know, she's got one of our old Windows phones, and she's like, hey, I've been listening to such and such. Can you put it on my phone? Well, no, you've been listening to it on Spotify on our computer. We don't own it, so I can't put it on your phone for you to listen to. And just let me clarify before anybody freaks out. She has a phone. It's an old Lumia 520. It has no cell phone service. It's basically a Zune, with some stupid Windows Phone games. So, yeah, like not having parental controls makes this, it's still a problem for us. We can't really give her access to everything that she wants. So I love this idea. Still doesn't quite work out for me. But man, 6 people for $15 a month. I don't think any of the other competitors are anywhere close to being anywhere near that price. Are they? Can you think of any?
Well, I know that some of the plans are for 5 users, but I honestly don't know what their prices are because this isn't something that I even think about. I'm the only person in our household that has music streaming accounts, and any time that we use them, they're usually on some device in the house.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. Yeah. So, hey, Groove Music, where's your family plan?
Good question.
Yeah, it doesn't exist. Spoilers. All right, so that's it for Spotify. Richard, you got to test out a new Windows app for Sonos fans.
Yeah, I did. You know, we reported a couple of weeks ago about how Sonos had said they were not going to be providing a Windows platform update, or a Windows platform app, I should say, even though we know that they were working on one. And so third-party developers kind of end up filling that gap usually. Now, there has been an app called Phonos that is spelled Phonos that was available on Windows Phone for a while, and it is now also available on the Windows desktop and tablet platform. But now we have a new entry into this, and that is another rhyming app called Zonos. This one is also kind of punny, just like Phonos was, in that this kind of plays on the idea that you have multiple zones with your Sonos system. So Zonos gives you the ability to control each of your different Sonos zones around your home. It runs off of your network, so you don't have to have an account, just like most of these apps, and it detects all the devices that you have. From what I can tell, this is a really powerful app. Now, I don't have the Windows 10 mobile version because I don't have a Windows 10 phone, but I do have the Windows 10 version that can run on desktop and tablet, and it's pretty powerful. It has pretty much all of the capabilities that you might have, except for some of the configuration stuff in the original Sonos apps that you'd have on, say, Android or iOS. It even says that it's capable of working on their holographic UI, which has to mean HoloLens. And I'm kind of curious about that because I didn't even know you could release something for that yet. So I'm really eager to find out what that's all about. But in putting it through the face, through its paces, you know, it can do what it's supposed to do. I just generally don't like the look and feel of the app. You know, the irony here is that the description of the app calls it one of the best, and then in parens, looking apps on Windows for operating your Sonos system. And I don't think it is. I don't think it is at all. In fact, if anything, I think it's really, really busy. If you're on a tablet, it has kind of three panes, one that lists all of your devices all of the time. And you know what? I don't need to see all of my devices all of the time. I only need to see them when I'm choosing what I want to listen to. And then it shows your queue, and then it shows another pane that has a permanent ability to search or browse for content. And it uses this list display metaphor that remember Green Bar? Do you know what Green Bar is? That shows you how old I am. Green Bar is that idea where every other couple of lines had a green background behind them on printed computer output to make it easier to read multiple lines. And we used to see table formatting similar to this in old Word documents and stuff like that. Well, generally, you don't do that anymore. And certainly in operating system software, you don't do that. But for some reason, this app does that. So it's adding a whole lot of visual complexity where it's not needed. It also has an action bar on each of the three sections that I just talked about. So there's like three separate action bars, one under each of the different sections of the application. There's a lot going on here. My advice, I mean, look, I don't mean to bash on any third-party effort to bring something to the table to fill this gap. This is a first gen. I hope we see some updates to make this a little bit cleaner and easier to use. But my advice is pay the $1.29 for Phonos. Use that instead. It's a lot simpler.
So, like, in terms of functionality, it's got everything that you're looking for. You're just not a big fan of how it looks and acts.
Yes, exactly. I'm not a fan at all of the way it looks. I think it is way too much going on in the screen. Too many notes.
Okay. Well, maybe the developers behind it will heed your advice, and maybe in a few weeks we'll see an updated version. Maybe.
If they listen to this, I'm going to be highly impressed. But
well, maybe we'll
hopefully
have
they get some other
them.
Feedback. I have seen some feedback in the store that said that it was a little bit hard to use. Someone had trouble finding the volume. The volume! It's hard to find the volume. And that's true, unfortunately. Anyway.
People control the volume within the apps?
That's how you control Sonos.
Oh, right. Because it's not coming out of your computer speakers.
Right.
Sorry. that was kind of dumb. Okay. All right. Well, hopefully we'll see some improvements there. We'll move on to our last audio story of the night. Sirius XM appears to be working on an app for Windows 10 users. Now, this story comes from Windows Central. They received a tip from someone claiming to have gotten an email straight from Sirius inviting them to beta test a Windows 10 app that they're working on. And I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt. Why would they make that up and forge an email? It makes sense. So the idea is that this app would be a Windows 10 desktop or tablet app. Apparently the email doesn't say anything about there being a mobile app. And that's cool. But what a lot of the commenters are saying, which, you know, I don't have a lot of feelings on this because I'm not a SiriusXM subscriber, but what a lot of the commenters were saying was SiriusXM already has a really great web player that works really well on the desktop. A desktop app is not what they need. What they need is a mobile app. And right. There isn't one. And they don't appear to be making one.
Yeah. And SiriusXM, in my opinion, doesn't have a really great history of creating good mobile apps. So I'm kind of surprised by this, particularly after we've seen kind of, I don't know, no real support of desktop platforms in the past. If I remember correctly, the last time that we saw SiriusXM on Windows was as a Flash plugin that was an add-in to Media Center.
Oh, wow.
That was roughly 10 years ago.
Jeez. Well, so, Richard, you always have big feelings on desktop apps and stuff. I mean, what's your feeling on, like, if they really do have a pretty good web app, are they just wasting their time making a Windows 10 desktop app?
I like having dedicated apps. I still think there's a good function for those in most people's workflows. I think we're getting to the point where we're starting to see that putting these things together as maybe notification area or menu or task area apps or applets is even more useful. So I hope that they're kind of thinking along those lines if that's what they're doing. But I mean, I still have my Sonos app running on my desktop. I still have my when I run the Spotify music collection locally, I have my desktop app open for that too. So I don't have any problem with them doing this. It just seems kind of odd that they're doing it now and for Windows.
Yeah. Agreed. So the one thought that I had was they could be using this as a way of testing their ability to make a decent app, put it out on PC and tablet, and then with maybe the end goal actually being a release on the Xbox One, since UWPs will work on the Xbox One come this summer.
That actually makes a lot of sense, and I didn't even think of that. Yes, that would be a great idea, particularly since we still don't have a Spotify app on the Xbox One.
Yeah, wouldn't that be nice?
It is a little bit ironic that this weekend I made the conscious decision to cancel my streaming Sirius XM service because I just didn't feel like I was getting enough for my money since I can no longer actually run it on Media Center anymore.
Oh, I didn't realize that was your big use case for it. I can't imagine there were many people that had that as their main use case.
No, but you may remember that one third-party app that came out that gave a really nice interface for Sirius XM. And I had that back in my old days of running the Media Center Entertainment Center in my kitchen years ago.
Oh, yeah. I remember that. All right. Well, let's move on to some of the biggest news of the week as we transition into the gaming section of the show. This news hit on Wednesday. Brad Sams, who many will know is one of the writers at Therot.com. That's a little confusing to say, but it's true. He is one of the writers there. And he also does a weekly podcast of his own. It's fairly short. And on episode 41 of his podcast called The Sams Report, he broke some news about information that he has on what he believes Microsoft is going to be announcing at E3, which is only a couple weeks away now.
Yeah, yeah. There were a lot of hedging qualifiers in that statement you just made, though.
Well, I mean, he's basing this off of, you know, information from sources that he has, but of course, none of it's actually confirmed. I mean, it's confirmed in as much as he's got multiple sources, but until Microsoft actually admits that this stuff is true, it's still technically rumors, right?
Yeah, I look at all of this as rumors, particularly since the information on the internet on this stuff is all over the place. So let's dive in.
Sure. So the information that he got was that Microsoft is planning to announce a couple of different hardware devices at E3. The first one is what we would be calling the Xbox One Slim. They might not actually call it that, but it would be it would have a 2 terabyte hard drive on board, which would be nice, faster Wi-Fi, and the ability to do 4K video streaming. So basically, a smaller box than what the current Xbox One is, a behemoth. So it'd be much smaller, more storage, which is kind of desperately needed. And the ability to stream 4K video would be really nice. It's not going to do 4K gaming, but you know, at least you'd be able to watch Netflix in 4K and Amazon in 4K if you have a 4K TV.
This seems like what any console that would be coming out today should be sporting.
Yeah, I absolutely believe they're going to announce this or something very similar to this. And that it'll come out, you know, later this year, probably late summer. I think Brad Sams said he heard August for the release of this.
I would say, knowing Microsoft's history with trying to condense a whole lot of stuff into small spaces on gaming platforms and how well that worked in the past, that I am a little bit concerned about a higher density disk drive and a more highly capable graphics card crammed into a smaller space. One of the things that the Xbox One did really well was basically air circulation.
Right. It keeps that thing cool and quiet. I'm not super concerned. I mean, obviously a lot of people remember and suffered through the Red Ring of Death situation with the Xbox 360, but that was pretty much only on first generation Xbox 360s. They solved that problem and made consoles smaller as time went on with the Xbox 360. So I'm not going to be super concerned with that. I don't think they're going to be making this that much more powerful that it would make me that concerned. And when the Xbox One is so gigantic that I think they've got plenty of room in there to make this smaller and still keep the heat to a minimum.
All right, speculation time. What does this cost?
I think the price either stays the same or only drops a little.
What stays the same? Because the price of the box has been all over the place over the last 2 years.
You know, actually, so right now the current retail price is $350 for a 500 gig model, and I believe it's $450 for the 1 terabyte model. And this week we're seeing sales that basically every model of the Xbox One is dropped by $50. So now the entry level Xbox Ones are $300 instead of $350. What I wonder is, will they keep? Oh gosh, actually, this is really hard to predict because they have so many stinking models.
Right, and it's only going to get worse as this story continues.
Right. It is. So they have to phase out some of these, but they've basically got the 500 gig currently with no Kinect. They've got the 500 gig with a Kinect. They've got a 1 terabyte model, and they've got the Elite, which I think is different than the 1 terabyte model, but now I'm not entirely sure. There are too many SKUs. Like, I can't even keep this straight anymore.
It's like we're buying Windows.
It's worse than, I think there are more Xbox One SKUs than there are SKUs of Windows 10.
Definitely more SKUs of Xbox One, no doubt about it. I'm betting that if they do this right, it would be $399. I'm betting it's going to be instead $449.
I like the way you're thinking, and I think I agree with you there, that it probably will be $449 for the 2 terabyte model. All right, so the other one, this is far more speculatory, and there's even less details on this. And I'm not sure if Brad Sams is the one that used this word to describe it, but someone in the media described this other hardware device as a Chromecast-like streaming box, which really just doesn't jive.
And they already have one of those, too expensive.
The Miracast dongle, right?
Yep.
Yeah, that is a $60 Chromecast-like device that is just okay. No one knows how to use Miracast. It doesn't have the support of Chromecast. I don't think that makes sense. What I think this could be is essentially a streaming stick, or maybe just a small streaming box. I think it's probably more likely to be a small streaming box. The idea here is that it will play apps, universal Windows platform apps and all of the apps that are currently on the Xbox One. It will not play Xbox One games directly, but it would, in theory, be capable of streaming from an Xbox One that you have in your house, because you can stream using the Xbox UWP app on anything else across your network. So it makes sense that this box would be able to do that also. So you've got your Xbox One in the living room, you throw one of these in the bedroom, now you can stream the games to the bedroom, and everything's great.
You know what we call that? We call that an Xbox extender.
It kind of is, which is what I'm really hoping this all kind of gels together. So one of the other things that Brad Sams talked about on his podcast was that he thinks that Xbox is moving in a direction of being more of software than it is hardware. Now that has further implications down the line, but it kind of jives with what I was thinking and hoping we would see Microsoft be going in this direction in the coming year. And that is, if the Xbox is basically just a software concept, then everything that you can do on an Xbox One, you could theoretically do on a Windows 10 PC also. So where I would like to see this go is one of the other things that we're expecting them to announce at E3 is, of course, DVR support. And like, when we're actually going to see that. It's already been announced that it's coming, but I think that they're going to announce at E3 that the DVR support is coming into the Xbox One with the anniversary update this summer. Now, what I'm also hoping there is that this streamer box, like you said, will work as an Xbox extender, not just in terms of streaming games, but also in terms of being an extender to the DVR, basically a Windows Media Center extender, but with Xbox. And
one tuner.
Well, I mean, that's the other thing that I'm hoping for, is that they're going to announce more tuners, at least a dual tuner, I mean, ideally, I would like to see broad support for lots of different tuners that are out there that could be hooked up via USB or network.
Yeah.
I don't think we're going to see that, at least not initially. But I would be, I probably wouldn't be actually shocked. I would, it would not really be that surprising to see Microsoft screw this up. But Microsoft needs to come out and say, DVR is here. Here's a dual or more tuner to use with this thing, because a single tuner DVR is stupid.
Yeah, it really is. And I get it in terms of the ability to just watch one thing locally, but that can't in any way support a household. And it really isn't good as a substitute for people that are used to the capabilities of Media Center.
Right. Okay. So that's where I think this is going. Brad,
how much would you pay for this?
Well, so that's a big question. It kind of depends on what it does. Now, Brad Sams was speculating $100 to $150. Initially, I was like, whoa, that's way too much.
Well, that's no Chromecast.
It's no Chromecast. Yeah, absolutely. It's no Chromecast. It is up there at about the price of an Apple TV. So
exactly.
It's not completely out of the question, right?
Right.
I mean, the Apple TV starts at $150 now, doesn't it?
Well, the new generation of Apple TV, yes. You can still buy a traditional set-side streaming device that does nothing but give you your streaming services, and that's only $70. But if you want the thing that runs apps, yeah, you're going to pay $150.
Right. So that price isn't necessarily completely crazy, because it would be very similar to what the Apple TV is doing. The other thing is that it could come with an Xbox One controller at that price. And that's $60 right there.
Yeah, so, I don't buy that.
Okay.
I don't buy that. I mean, I don't mean to knock you down there, but I mean, that is $60 right there.
Right.
And that is...
It's wishful thinking.
Not like Microsoft.
No, it's not. No, this is absolutely a dream. I mean, Microsoft doesn't really tend to compete on price. That's one of the reasons why they are losing this video game console generation. So the likelihood of it being $150 and including a controller probably isn't very high, but I would like to see that happen.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, that price is hard to justify. So you want to think that there's more to it.
Right, because you know, they can say, "Oh, it runs apps just like the Apple TV." Well, sorry Microsoft, Apple has a better media ecosystem than you.
Yeah, way better.
You know, iTunes is better than Groove Music. Sorry, iTunes is better than movies and TV or whatever the crap they're calling the video app lately on Windows 10.
And who thought that we'd ever say iTunes is better than anything on this show, let alone it coming out of Josh's mouth?
Well, I don't really mean to say that iTunes as the Windows desktop software is better than Groove. Really, the platform.
Exactly. It's the media ecosystem that
they've
created.
Exactly. But that isn't where the hardware rumors stop. There's another big one, and that's that Microsoft is working on another revision of the Xbox One, I guess is what we could call it, codenamed Scorpio. And this is a much more powerful version of the Xbox One. The number that they keep throwing around is 6 teraflops. That sounds like a lot of flops, Richard. And I don't know that most people know what a teraflop is or even how to relate that to anything else. So the current Xbox One has about 1.4 teraflops of processing power. This is a way of measuring processing power, people. So to go from 1.4 to 6 would be gigantic. Now, how does this match up with Sony's stuff? The PlayStation 4 currently is like roughly 1.8, 1.7 teraflops. The rumored PlayStation 4K, or I don't remember what they're calling this upgraded version that's supposed to come out later this year, I think is in the 4-ish teraflop range. So this would be still you know, 50% more powerful than the rumored PlayStation 4 version coming out later this year, and way more powerful than what the Xbox One is right now. This could usher in a console that actually does 4K gaming, because I'm not convinced that this new PlayStation coming out later will actually do 4K gaming. The other big rumor is, and this seems all but confirmed at this point, is that Microsoft is going to have big plans for integrating with Oculus Rift, which, Richard, that's something that you and I have been talking about for months, at least going back to last year at some point, that it just makes sense for Microsoft to partner with someone like Oculus Rift, because they don't need to develop their own VR solution when all of the VR solutions that are currently out there work on Windows PCs, which is what the Xbox One is. So
yeah,
that makes total sense. I think we're definitely going to see some sort of announcement around an Oculus Rift support. And this hardware device isn't supposed to come out until next year. Some places were reporting next spring, which does actually line up with other rumors that we've heard about, you know, future versions of the Surface and Surface Book and maybe the Surface Phone, all coming out around the Redstone 2 timeframe, which keeps pointing towards spring of 2017. That's just a bad time to be releasing a video game console, is the only real problem with that. Normally, you want to release those around the holiday season.
My take on this is that if this isn't coming out until next year, I'm going to be really surprised if they announce it, because that would be a tip of their hat to the competition, probably way before they want to actually expose this information.
Yeah, it's a tricky situation, because you want to do whatever you can to keep people from buying that PlayStation upgrade system this fall. But the best way to do that would be to release a competitor at the same time, not 5 or 6 months later.
Right. And then if that's their intent, then have a fall event where they announce their next cool new thing right before that new device actually hits shelves.
Yeah. Yeah, that would make total sense. And there is a game conference that's huge around the fall. It's called Gamescom. It's in Germany. I think it's usually in August. It's a huge, huge event. It's not quite as big as E3, but it's pretty much the second biggest video game show of the year. So that would make a lot more sense to announce it then. So there's one other thing that I kind of wanted to get into here. There's, as I've been thinking about where Microsoft may be going with the Xbox, and thinking back to Phil Spencer's previous comments about how he'd kind of like to see the console generations not last so long and to more mimic phones and stuff, but he doesn't really want people like opening up the cases and swapping out video cards and stuff like that, because then it's really just a PC, so what's the point? I've been wondering, what if, and I don't know if they would announce this year, but what if Microsoft's actual plan is, you know, these systems, they're basically PCs now. In the past, consoles were not PCs. They were very different. But now they've got fully through PC architectures. They've got PC processors, PC video cards in them, basically. So why not go full bore down the PC route, with a slight difference in how it's executed? So maybe Microsoft continues to put out Xboxes, and the naming probably changes a little bit, but they probably release Xboxes more frequently. They're all backwards compatible to some level, but at the same time, allow their hardware partners, who are already making gaming PCs, to also release Xbox-class consoles of their own. And these can come out somewhat frequently. Maybe it's a yearly, maybe it's a bi-yearly thing. And, you know, they would all have to support some minimum level of things. So, like, you know, if this was in the Xbox One level of the generation cycle, then They would also have to support the Xbox One, you know, launch games and stuff like that. And ideally, they would also, the game developers would have to support that level of hardware for X number of years too, which is the trickier part of all of this. But I could kind of see them moving down this direction. But I also, at the same time, I know that there's people screaming while they're listening to me say this, yelling at me, saying, Josh, it sounds like what you're describing are the Steam machines that you think are dumb. Like, that's what this is. It's kind of what this is, but with more standards wrapped around it, with more backwards compatibility sort of built into all of this, you know, more regulations kind of built into this, so that, you know, you can be confident that a machine that you're going to buy is going to last a few years, but still have the option for the people who want to go out and have the latest and greatest stuff, but still have the stability and simplicity of a console. Because dealing with PC gaming, it's still a ton of work. Like, most of my PC gamer friends, they get a new game and then they spend the first half hour to an hour tweaking settings so that it runs the way they want it to run on their machine. When I get an Xbox One game, I spend the first half an hour to an hour playing the game. And that's what I want to continue to do. Does this make sense, Richard?
Yeah, I kind of see what you're saying, but I also wonder, given how Microsoft has a history of burning its hardware partners on specialized hardware projects, who other than Asus, who's kind of willing to be, you know, anyone's date to the cool new club, is going to be willing to play here?
Well, Asus has their line of gaming PCs. HP has a line of gaming machines.
HP is a great example, right? I mean, HP has been burned again and again and again by Microsoft, creating customized hardware for platforms that Microsoft has abandoned. And I think that's one of the things that you and I talked about when we were surprised that they were announcing a Windows phone. So are they going to be willing, are other companies going to be willing to create yet another specialized hardware platform for Microsoft? I think that's a hard sell unless, and talk about crazy talk, unless we're talking about a platform that can be more than just a gaming console, but also perhaps a really powerful all-in-one, just comes as it is, PC.
Well, is that really all that different than what the Xbox is now and where it's going with the future support of UWP apps and all this stuff?
Well, and that's kind of my thinking there.
And if it's also going to have all this DVR functionality and potentially DVR extenders throughout the household, I mean, it could make sense. You know, here's where I think this could actually get even crazier. If they get the HPs and the Asuses and all this on board, what's to stop Microsoft from saying, we love our hardware partners, we don't need to make these machines anymore, you guys make the Xboxes, we're done with this hardware?
Windows Phone.
Well, spoilers. I mean, they could. They absolutely could. Like I view them opening the Xbox platform to third-party hardware partners as them kind of welcoming everybody back in. Hey guys, we're sorry we made you so mad with the Surface. It worked, but you know, you're finally making nice hardware, but let's just kind of move past that. And here, come make these awesome gaming computer console thingies for the living room, because we really think this could take off.
Yeah, maybe.
It might just be crazy enough to work.
Maybe. It might be. I don't know that I would buy one.
All right, so we've got a couple of other quick Xbox things to hit on. Some kind of big news also hit last week, and that is that Rocket League, a wildly successful game, now actually supports cross-network play between the Xbox One and Windows PCs. It doesn't support it with the PlayStation yet, but if you've got Rocket League on an Xbox and you want to play with some friends who have it on a PC, you can totally do that now. My friends have tried it out. It totally works. It's pretty simple. It works the same way that other multiplayer stuff works in Rocket League. You start a private match. You send the information about the match to your friends on the other operating system. They can play. Everything works perfectly. It's cool. It's great to finally see this happening on a real game, a really popular game that a lot of people love. And hopefully Sony is actually going to do something about this and work with Microsoft on making this work across those two platforms.
Yeah, I love this. I want to see this across everything. I think this is a great idea. And there's no reason that this can't work across platform, right? I mean, this is, for all intents and purposes, you're sending generic messages that any platform can read and interpret, and they should be able to figure out how to make this work. This is probably more about fiefdoms than it is technology.
Yeah, I completely agree. Yep. All right, and then because it's also a new month, we'll also hit on the Xbox Live Games with Gold for June real quick. On the Xbox One, you get to start out the month, all month long, Goat Simulator. This game's really popular. I think it's stupid, but a lot of people love it. It is ridiculous. If you want to wander around being a goat, this is the game for you, and it's free. In the second half of the month through the first half of July, you can get The Crew. That's a racing game. I'm going to check it out. It's one that I didn't buy when it came out back. Gosh, this might have been a launch title or right around launch of the Xbox One. On the Xbox 360, the first half of June, you get Super Meat Boy. And in the second half of the month, you get XCOM Enemy Unknown. Those are both pretty highly rated games. And of course, backwards compatible on the Xbox One. So check those all out because they're all free and there's no reason not to. Even Richard will be downloading these.
Yeah, I will actually. I went in today to make sure that I had downloaded everything for May before the end of the month, and I already have.
All right. So that's it for our gaming news, Richard. Let's move on to some mobile news.
All right. Now, you know, there's been a lot of news about what's going on with Windows Phone, and most of it has been wrong. So I wanted to talk about it a little bit. There's been news that Windows Phone is dead.
It's dead, Richard. At like every news site has been saying it's dead. It's dead, it's dead, it's dead for like a year now. How could it not be dead?
Well, so that's exactly it, right? Like you and I have been hearing this news for at least a year, if not more. What has actually happened is that Nadella made a formal announcement that Microsoft is again refocusing. In our notes, I wrote refocusing the Windows Phone hardware efforts on enterprise. And so what does this mean, basically? What I understand this to mean is that while at the beginning of the year, there were statements saying that they were going to appeal to the enterprise, to the budget segment, because they've done very well there. Well, they've done well. Well,
it's where they've done the best.
They've done something there. And, and to enthusiasts, that now they are going to focus all of their attention on the enterprise. What does that mean? That means we're probably only going to see hardware devices come out. Doesn't necessarily mean phones, but hardware devices come out from Microsoft that support the use of Windows Phone technology in the enterprise. Think of things like the, I keep forgetting the name of the service. Is it Continuum?
Yes.
Think of like the docs that let you use Continuum and stuff like that. And think of the platform that that enables for enterprise users with phone devices. This does not mean that third-party manufacturers are no longer going to be producing Windows phones. In fact, if anything, Microsoft is now relying on third-party manufacturers to create Windows phones if the Windows 10 mobile platform is to stay alive. This does not mean that Microsoft is going to stop or end the Windows 10 mobile platform. In fact, they need to keep it alive. It is a part of their at least midterm strategy for the enterprise. So I even heard a podcast that I respect immensely incorrectly report that, oh, I think I heard that Microsoft is going to be just making Android phones now. No, that's not what's going on.
Nope. That was definitely not announced or anything even similar to that.
Now, I think the thing that's unclear to people, and understandably, it was intentionally vague, is will Microsoft make any more phones at all? Because one of the things that we didn't really report on, because it doesn't really affect this audience so much, is that recently Microsoft had sold off what remained of the feature phone business that was originally from Nokia that is now no longer part of Microsoft. And then in this past week, very unfortunately, and I say this with great reverence, is that pretty much everybody that remained who had been hired from Nokia and moved into the Microsoft world is getting let go. And that's kind of the big news that accompanies this announcement, is that Microsoft is divesting themselves from the staff that were essentially responsible for what is now known as Windows Phone hardware.
Right.
So what do you think? Are we going to see any new Windows phones from Microsoft tailored toward the enterprise?
So I think that that's actually a two-part question. So the first question is, will we see any more phones from Microsoft in 2016? And will we see any phones from Microsoft running Windows 10 mobile after 2016?
Okay.
My prediction to both of those is no. The first one's easy. I mean, it sounds like Microsoft has absolutely no plans to produce any more phones this year. Like, I think the Lumia brand is done. I don't think it's coming back. They've released the, 650 or whatever. And they've released some mid-range enterprise-y focused phone earlier this year. And I think that's going to be the last one this year. Then, of course, there's the idea of the Surface phone. It hasn't looked like the Surface phone was going to come out this year for a while now. It's looking like if the Surface phone comes out, that it would be during that Redstone 2 time frame next spring. My prediction here is we're just going to continue to see Windows 10 mobile drop off a cliff. I mean, the market share has already dropped crazy, crazy numbers. The usage share is dropping and dropping and dropping. Those are different. Market share is how many units were sold. Usage is how many are actually being used. The market share has dropped crazy, but that's because there haven't been any phones to buy since the 950 came out.
Right.
And I think that by the time they would get to releasing the Surface phone, they're going to have seen that there is hardly any usage share left, and that launching a Surface phone would do nothing to rejuvenate the Windows 10 mobile ecosystem, and that it could only, especially if they call it Surface, could only do damage to the Surface brand, and they'll scrap that also.
Yeah, that's an interesting point that I hadn't really thought about. I mean, essentially, what they're going for, if you read into this the way I do, is that they're trying to, instead of the model that they had, adopt more of the Google model, where they rely on third-party manufacturers to produce the bulk of Windows phones out there, and they'll occasionally come out with a reference model. In Google's case, that's the Nexus. It sounds like what you're saying is that's probably not to their advantage. If this survives at all, it's solely going to be on the backs of third-party providers.
Right, which I don't think is going to work. So, like, I think that whole Nexus reference model thing is their idea, but you can't go a year and a half without releasing any real high-quality phones, which if they were to wait until spring of 2017 to release a Surface phone is how long they will have waited, just like when they went a year and a half between releasing the Icon and the 950. That in right. and of itself all but doomed Windows Phone back then. So they, like, that HP Elite whatever Windows Phone, does it look exciting? Absolutely. But we've been through this enough times to know that one single Windows Phone, no matter how great it is, isn't enough to save this platform.
Yep.
The 900 didn't do it. The 920 didn't do it. The 1520 didn't do it. The Icon didn't do it. Nothing is going to save. No single device is going to save this operating system at this point. And it definitely isn't going to be a device from a third-party manufacturer. So there's not going to be any big Microsoft devices this year. The Surface phone, I guess it depends on if that's actually a phone. Like, there's some rumblings now that the Surface phone might not really be so much a phone as more of a smaller tablet, but that doesn't make as much sense now that Intel has basically said, we kind of suck at tablet processors. So, like, they're not going to, are they going to release an ARM-based small tablet Surface Mini, like the one that they killed 2 years ago? That doesn't seem to make a ton of sense either.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not looking good.
No.
It's not dead. I'm not quite dead yet. But to quote one of my favorite Monty Python movies, but it is not looking good.
No, it's not looking good. I'm not calling it dead either. While I don't think Microsoft is ever going to release another Windows phone, Windows 10 Mobile is not dead. They are going to continue to work on this operating system. And at the very least, they're going to continue to work on it because it requires such a small amount of effort relative to what it used to take for them to work on Windows Phone 7 and 8 and 8.1. Now that Windows Mobile is just, you know, a slightly different version of Windows 10, which they're definitely going to continue to support and continue to add features to, it's not that much work for them to continue to release new versions of Windows 10 Mobile. So, yeah, if you've got a Windows phone and you absolutely love it and it does everything you want, you're going to continue to be able to use that. And I think for a little while longer, third-party manufacturers are going to continue to make Windows phones. But that's going to be it. And there's probably going to be compromises there. And I think all we're going to continue to see is more and more companies say, yeah, we're not going to release an app for Windows Phone because there's 0.6% market share or something, you know, because that number is just going to keep dropping and they're going to see absolutely no reason to release apps for this ecosystem.
Well, and that's a really good point, right? Is that we continue to see week after week, additional companies say, we're not putting out an update for our app, or we're shutting down our app for Windows Phone. Just recently, PayPal shutting down phones, not just for shutting down apps, rather, not just for Windows Phone, but for a number of kind of defunct platforms, for also for the BlackBerry and also for Amazon Fire. Now, technically, as I read it, that was originally intended for the Amazon Fire phone. Because let's admit it, there are probably like 11 of those. Right. But I think people have been reading that as the Amazon Fire tablet. And I don't think that's the case, because the Amazon Fire tablet is actually, for all intents, from, you know, what we can tell, a fairly popular tablet.
Right.
So anyway, yeah, it's not looking good. And, you know, it makes diehard Windows Phone fans kind of, I don't know, want to jump ship.
You know, it's funny that you say that. I have a really, really good relationship with a diehard Windows Phone fan. Oh, me. I've been using Windows Phone since the Samsung Focus. I don't remember.
I don't even know what that phone was.
I don't remember what year that was, but that was Windows Phone 7.0. This was the pre-Mango days. I remember waiting
for that. That was Windows Phone 7 system.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I remember anxiously waiting for the Mango update for the Samsung Focus. I loved that phone. It still might be my favorite Windows phone of all time. It was just wonderful. Everyone who listens to this knows how much of a Windows Phone fan and proponent and, you know, just pusher of this operating system that I've been. I'm done. A few days ago, I ordered an Android phone. I'm done. I'm sorry, Windows Phone. There's just, I don't see a reason to stick with this anymore. And there's a few reasons for it. Like, this did happen. You know, I finally made this decision the day after this big announcement from Nadella. That wasn't the only reason. I mean, it's really been building. We've talked about this a lot over the last few months, that I wasn't quite sure that I would be sticking with Windows Phone for that much longer. And now I've finally decided I'm done. Everyone's going to want to know the specific reasons. Here's the main three, okay? Windows 10, from the very beginning, Windows 10 has just not been that solid of an operating system. Windows 8, Windows 8.1, very solid all the way from the earliest releases all the way through. It was always a rock solid operating system. Windows 10, and I'm not just talking on phones here, my Surface, other computers, laptops, I've always had issues with them, but especially on my phones. And that's not just on insider preview rings. This is on, you know, release previews, release candidates, RTMs, whatever the heck you want to call them. I always have some amount of issues with Windows 10, more so than I ever did with Windows 8. But when trying to keep up with the most recent stuff in these insider preview rings, it's been way worse, way worse. There's the app gap. Like, has the app gap been that big of a problem to me? Not huge, but for my wife, who, by the way, is also switching to Android along with me, she's frequently said, oh, I wish I could have that app. I wish I could have that app. Sorry, you can't. The place where the app gap has hurt me the most or frustrated me the most is that I'm also really big into this smart home stuff. And, you know, you go to CES and you see all of these crazy new products and stuff. And they say, yeah, our app is coming to Android and iOS. And I say, what about Windows right. Phone? And they're like, yeah, that's probably not going to happen because no one uses Windows Phone. So right. I've been missing out on all of those things. And then the final reason is, why should I stick with Windows Phone if Microsoft isn't? Now, I know that's a little bit derogatory, maybe more derogatory than it needs to be. But let's face it, this is a sinking ship. This is an operating system that, like, it just doesn't have much of a future. It does have a future.
One could say similar things about Media Center.
Well, sure. I mean, Media Center is far more dead than Windows Phone. I'm probably leaving that soon too, but at least I'll be staying Microsoft in that I'm hoping to maybe just switch entirely to Xbox there. But so yeah, that's the thing. Everyone's going to want to know what the phone is. Decided to pick up a couple of Nexus 5 X's for Jen and I. We're both switching to that. I've heard the good and the bad. You don't have to send me any more tweets about how terrible you think it is and how I should have gone for the 6P. I got a great, great price on these. If I hate the 5X, I'll be able to sell it for about what I paid for it. I'm not worried. I think it's going to be fine. I guess the only other thing that I'd like to say about that is, if you've already made the jump to Android from Windows Phone and you are a big Microsoft person like me, let me know what it is that you're like. What are the apps? What are the things that I should be doing on an Android phone being a Microsoft guy? I want to hear from you guys.
Ooh.
Email us, comment on the show.
Yeah.
Hit us up on Twitter. I want to know what you guys are doing, because that's the direction I'm going now.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And you know that just from the numbers alone, there have to be many Android users in our audience.
Yeah, absolutely. There have to be tons. I'm sure we have more Android users in our audience than Windows Phone users. I'm positive.
All right. Well, that's sad. That's like an end of an era.
It is the end of an era. And it is sad. And I'm not happy about this. Like, I've never been more unhappy about buying a phone than I was when I bought the Nexus 5X. I'm not excited to be leaving Windows Phone.
That is such a sad statement.
SolaSuite wants to know when I'm going to start coding in Java. I don't have to because of Xamarin and because of React Native. Like, yeah, that is not happening. I'm not switching to Java. That's not a concern.
Never, ever, ever don't do it.
Yeah, that's not a concern. No fears. All right, let's move on to hopefully some happy news. Let's talk about some things going on in our entertainment center. I'm really, really, really hoping that you have a happily ever after story about your Drobo.
Yeah, so am I. Someday. So I am now on day 33 of my Drobo's recovery. There is progress, though.
Really?
So, yeah. So here's something that I figured out. I might add, without the help of the folks from Drobo. And that is that while my Drobo has been in recovery mode, it has been in and out of recovery mode. It slips into recovery mode and then it stops and it's just normal for a while. And then it goes into recovery mode again and then it stops. And it's been doing that for literally weeks. And that seemed kind of strange to me.
Yeah.
But I also noticed that when I look at the capacity of the drive, it is nearly full. I mean, less than half a gig available in storage space. And so I have to wonder if it's trying to recover the recoverable stuff. Imagine all the caching it's having to do. That's not even the right word. Hashing might be a better term. That it's having to do to be able to slice it up the way it needs to and position the blocks where they need to be. And so I thought, well, if I have to copy stuff off of this anyway, which I have now been doing, why not delete the stuff from the Drobo itself and free up some space and see if that'll help the process along at all? So I contacted Drobo and I said, hey, would it be helpful if I free up some space and actually let, you know, give this stuff some room? And they said, yeah, that might help.
But I thought you couldn't connect to it at all.
No, since it started recovery about, I guess I should say since it resumed recovery about 3.5 weeks ago, I have been able to connect to it.
Oh.
So I can actually get files off of it. It hasn't even been three. It is 33 days since I've been able to get to it. So this has been going on for so much longer than that. So I'm copying stuff off, and I've already gotten off a bunch of stuff. Like, I don't know, maybe half a terabyte. So now that I have that elsewhere, I deleted the content on the Drobo. Within, I would say, 3 hours, it had refilled that space, which means that I think that means, yeah, it's struggling with space. It is trying to use every available bit of space that it has to recreate the storage the way it's supposed to be so that it's accessible with redundant storage. So I have now taken another folder, which was 3 terabytes, and copied that off to another drive elsewhere on my network. That is in progress now. It should be finished very shortly. When I do that, I'm going to delete that folder and see if that doesn't just help let this thing finish its job. So I'm giving it one more week, Josh. One more week.
Is your Drobo saga going to be done before or after the 4th of July?
Well, I mean, after I get it recovered, then I still have to figure, okay, now what? Now, right. Which drives do I have to trash? Which ones can I keep? Where can I put additional? Then I have to copy stuff back to it if I end up keeping it. If not, then I need to find a new storage device. And, you know, I'm sure Dave and the guys want me to get a QNAP or something like that, but I'm just not willing to do that yet. So, yeah, we could very well be discussing this on July 4th weekend.
All right. So what else is going on in your entertainment center?
Well, I've been watching lots of content. Arrow, The Flash, New Girl, they all had their season finales. I have to say, I don't talk about New Girl much on this show just because it's this like flighty little silly sitcom and you don't like comedy and, you know, because you're a grouch. But the New Girl finale surprised me by being incredibly funny and incredibly heartfelt and heartwarming in the little half hour that they compacted the final episode. I was very, very impressed with what they pulled off there. Banshee, the series that I've talked about occasionally from Cinemax, the very violent cops is robbers story is now over. That wrapped up. That was actually very satisfying. They had a satisfying ending to that. They tied up all the loose ends. It was clear that is done. It's not coming back. It was a great ride. I am finally caught up on Doctor Who. I am trying to catch up on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. That is really good, and I'm looking forward to that as it ends its season. Although, I'm disappointed to learn that Agent Carter has not been renewed for a third season. So, that won't be back next year. I'm kind of bummed about that. That was pretty cool. Over the weekend, we had some guests and we watched some movies because it rained a lot this weekend. So we watched The Big Short, we watched Kingsman, and we watched The World's End. They were all really good in their own different ways. I think The Big Short was my favorite. I really, really liked that film. It's one of those things where it's, believe it or not, a comedy based on an American tragedy told in a very creative way, and it deserved all the Oscar nods that it got.
That's a comedy that I actually do want to see.
It's fantastic.
That's the one about the guys that were like betting against the housing collapse, right?
Yep. These were the guys that saw what was going to happen before it happened, and nobody would believe them.
Yeah, that looks good.
Yeah, very, very cool. And I don't usually talk about music, but I recently did something very unusual. I bought music on disc.
What?
And I did that because
you're a hoarder?
Well, that could be the reason, or it could be that it was actually cheaper to buy it on disc at Target than it was to buy the same album digitally.
Wow.
And this is the latest album from Dierks Bentley. Now, I bought his last album, Riser, after getting introduced to it through iTunes, and it was really good. It was probably, in my opinion, his breakout album. He's had like six albums out, but this was really original material, kind of got his name in places where it hadn't been before, and probably my favorite album of 2014. And I'm not a country guy. I'm just starting to learn to like different types of country music. And I really liked his album. This new album, it's called Black. I have one word. Meh.
Glad you didn't pay that much for it then.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. So that's what I've been up to in my entertainment center. How about you?
I guess one tip for you. Listen to it on Spotify before you buy it.
You know, it's funny, when I wrote a review today on iTunes, that's exactly what I wrote.
Even for bands that I love, like the Lumineers released a new album recently. Love, love, love them. Knew I was going to love it. I still listened to it on Spotify before I bought it.
Yeah, one of the problems with this album is that this is an album where the digital streaming rights to it are being very tightly controlled. So there are only five songs available for streaming right now.
I see.
But, I just kind of assumed the last one was awesome. This will be awesome too. Not how it works. I forget about that.
Not always. All right. Well, for me on the TV side, it's been all sports for me. Penguins are in the Stanley Cup Finals. I wouldn't have expected this, but they are. So still watching hockey. That's consumed the vast majority of any time that I've spent in front of a TV over the last few weeks. But this weekend was also a huge, huge weekend for motorsports. Formula One at Monaco, watched some of that race. And then, of course, the Indy 500, got to watch most of that.
I watched about 3 minutes of that.
Weird weekend. I don't get into oval racing, but it's the Indy 500, so I have to watch.
And hey, Dave was periscoping the parade beforehand.
Oh, was he?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So that's it for what I've been watching. But there actually is another TV show that I want to bring up. This is something that my oldest daughter has been watching. She's 8. It's a show. I'm pretty sure it's on Disney, called Girl Meets World. Now, for people my age, you might remember a show from when we were kids called Boy Meets World.
Yep.
This is a follow-up to that. Now I'm forgetting the boy's name from Boy Meets World, but it was him and Topanga were the main characters in Boy Meets World. In Girl Meets World, they're married, they're mom and dad, they've got kids, their daughter is the star of the show, and it's Girl Meets World. And, oh, Corey is his name. Corey is a teacher at the school where he was causing so much trouble in Boy Meets World. The reason I want to bring up this show is, like, I haven't sat down and watched a whole lot of this with Eden, but the little bits that I have seen have really, really impressed me for the messages that they're sharing with kids, that the way that they're attacking really important issues like bullying and just lots of issues like that. They're hitting them in a really, really great and moving way. And I, like, if you've got kids in this age range, this might be a show that you might want to find a way to get them to check out without telling them to watch it, because then they won't, because mom or dad wants them to watch it, so it couldn't possibly be cool. Find a way to get your kids to watch Girl Meets World. It's a pretty impressive show.
Cool.
On the video game front, I finally finished Life is Strange. Oh my gosh, I love that game. I've never had anything in any form of media, be it TV, movies, music, games, period, nothing, impact me in the way that Life is Strange did.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, from, like, if you can let yourself really put yourself into the story, it is an incredibly gripping story. Like, you really have to make yourself be the main character. And if you can, and you have a heart, like, it's going to have some incredibly difficult moments. And it was so, so good. Definitely. Like I've been saying for months, you guys have to check out Life is Strange. Find a way to check out Life is Strange. It's so good. And then Overwatch came out last week. I had mentioned before I had played the beta, loved it, pre-ordered it, got a few friends to pre-order it. We've been playing it together. It's so much fun to play with friends. If I didn't have friends that were playing with me, I'm not sure that I would have as much fun, because you have to be playing together as a team. And if you're with a bunch of people who don't play well as a team, then you're not going to have any fun at all. But if you've got some friends who are into first-person shooters, but you don't have to be phenomenal at them, because it's not all about, you know, Twitch shooting and stuff. There's a lot of different things to do in this game. Check out Overwatch. It's a ton of fun. And if you're a PC gamer, just get it there, because it's cheaper on PC, as much as that pains me to say.
Nice.
So that's pretty much it for me. Stanley Cup Finals are still going on, so next week it's probably going to sound about the same for me. And then we have one more announcement to make. On the last episode, we announced our Quantum Break giveaway. We got a ton of entries. It was great to see the enthusiasm about this game. And congratulations to Aaron. I won't give out his last name or anything like that, but we did have a winner. He's really excited to play Quantum Break on his gaming rig, and I can't wait to hear what he thinks about it. So congratulations, Aaron, and you never know when we're going to have something to give away. So make sure you're always keeping an eye on our website and this podcast to find out what we are giving away.
I think we have some HD Home Run hats somewhere in a cabinet of mine.
Those might not be quite as exciting as, you know, a AAA game that just came out a couple months ago. But someone might want them. All right. Well, if you'd like to get a hold of us, there's a lot of ways you can do that. We're on Twitter. Richard is at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard. The website is at DigiMediaZone, D-I-G-I MediaZone. We're on Facebook too, so you can like our page over at facebook.com/theDMZ. We're on Google Plus. We've got email, of course, entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. We've got some other podcasts that you should check out, like Richard's other show, Home On. And you can find all of our shows at pretty much any place you could find podcasts, but we're on iTunes, Pocket Cast, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio. We're on Google Play now, and we have the links for those up on the website now if you want to be listening in Google Play. And if you want to help us out, the best way you can do that, head on over to iTunes, give us a rating or a review. It helps more people find us, and we really, really appreciate it.
Yeah, sadly, there's no way of providing feedback on Google Play, so we're still going to direct you to iTunes.
Right, exactly. And then, if you want to participate in the show in the most real-time way that you possibly could, come and listen to the show live. We normally record Tuesday nights around 8:30 p.m. Eastern. It's the summer, guys. Schedules are crazy. It's not always going to be Tuesdays at 8:30. So just follow us on Twitter. We always tweet about, you know, we tweet the time of when the show is going to be in the afternoon to let you guys know. And hopefully we'll see you around the next time we record.
However, if we record next week on Tuesday and you live in the state of California, don't listen live. Go vote. That's my public service announcement. Go out and vote.
Well, they could vote and then come listen live. Are the polls okay, only fine. Open while but we're recording?
Just make sure you vote.
There you go. I will never tell people not to vote. Absolutely. All right. But that's going to do it for episode 369. I'm Josh Pollard. He's Richard Gunther. And we'll be back next time with hopefully some happier news for episode 370. Until then, adios.
Goodbye.